This podcast is brought to you by Northern Motor Group. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Hello, I'm your host, Louise Taffer, with Josh Parrish joining me here in the studio. It's a pleasure to have your company. Thank you so much for joining us. Coming up tonight, we have a bit of a packed show. Lots to get through. Sydney FC CEO Danny Townsend will be joining us at 5:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time after their A-League Grand Final win. Then we'll be checking in with our Australians Abroad expert Damien Davies at 5:45 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time to get all the latest news on what is happening over there with some of our Aussies who might be even linking themselves away from certain clubs.
Yes, a lot of clubs getting relegated, getting promoted, and obviously contracts expiring and so forth. Actually, Jack Duncan and Reece Williams' club over in the Middle East got relegated over the weekend. So it could be that those guys who actually recently signed contract extensions might be looking for a move away, maybe back to Australia or elsewhere in Asia. So heaps to get through with Damien later on in the program.
Looking forward to it. And remember, you can get involved at any time. Give us a call, 03 99 99 99, or you can tweet to us at FNR_radio, or you can comment below on our Facebook Live if you are joining us there. Josh, there's a little bit of news going around at the moment. Before we get to all of the European stuff, let's touch on what's going on here in Australia, particularly here in Melbourne, because we know that this was coming. He was going to leave at the end of the season. We're talking about Melbourne Victory's marquee, Keske Honda, who will play his last game for the club in their final Asian Champions League clash tomorrow night.
Yes, very much official. I think we heard from Honda, who spoke to Fox Sports before the semi-final game, that he was likely to be leaving, and obviously he only had the one-year contract, so no surprises. But it is a bit of a shame to see one of the best players we've ever seen, grace these shores, leave after a season in which, you know, the expectations were, of course, huge, both on and off the field. And I think that injury really did him in the middle of the season. He wasn't quite able to recapture that early form, but I still think he was, you know, great value for the league, and maybe Victory didn't do enough to maximise him off the park.
Yeah, we touched on that throughout the season, didn't we? I don't think they did enough to basically utilise his name, his brand, you know, to further enhance the club's image.
I think the fact that he came just before, well, when we're on the absolute verge of A-League independence, is a bit of a blow to the club because, you know, as we know, the A-League clubs don't really have sole control over their intellectual property, their brand, especially overseas. So they're actually sort of having their brands leased back to them by FFA, which is a bit bizarre. And that restricts, you know, kind of what they can do to promote themselves and also the revenue coming back to them from, you know, foreign shirt sales, for example. I mean, the Western Sydney Wanderers, when Shinji Ono came here, and he sold so many shirts over in Japan, but the Wanderers only got a little fraction of that revenue. Most of it went to FFA. So I guess that reduces the incentive for A-League clubs to kind of expand into Asia and promote their brand that way. But you still think Victory could have done a lot more with, you know, maybe having a dedicated Japanese language section on their website or a dedicated Japanese social media account. And maybe that way you could have, you know, kept the attention of those fans who tuned in just because Keske Honda was playing, because it did generate interest. They didn't manage to get a Japanese sponsor for the Asian Champions League, and obviously, you know, going out limply in the group stage as well didn't live up to expectations. So the results didn't quite go how Victory were expecting them to go, either domestically or in Asia, but I think they could have done a lot more to try and use him as a marketing tool, because he is such an icon of Asian and Japanese football with such a huge following. And he's been very good value, as we've covered on, for fuck's sake, the Melbourne Victory show here on the station. All season every week we did an Instagram update, and you know he's great value in terms of the way he promotes the league, the way he makes the league look like it's, you know, one of the best going around, when, you know, we know it has some serious problems. So he's been doing a lot, off the field, maybe on the field, the injury problems restricted him, but I still think Victory could have done more to maximise his marketing potential at least.
It was a million-dollar injury, you'd have to say.
Yep.
His hamstring injury kept him out for 9 matches mid-season. Now, that's partly why I don't think that he has done as much as he could have this season here in the A-League.
Yeah, I don't think he... That injury obviously hurts. And, you know, as you say, the million-dollar injury is on a $3 million salary. That's not all coming from Victory, of course. A lot of that was coming out of the marquee fund provided to FFA by Fox Sports. So they obviously see the value in getting these high-profile players to come over here. And you know, maybe we didn't get the return with that injury. But these things happen in football, and that was a devastating blow, of course. And even though he was still good when he came back, maybe he didn't hit the heights that we saw in the first sort of 7 games of the A-League season where he was absolutely dominating, you know, scoring heaps of goals from midfield. And also we didn't get that moment. We didn't get the classic free kick or long-range bomb. You know, you've seen him at CSKA, at Milan, at even Pachuca in Mexico. He scored quite a few, you know, absolute golazos, if you will. And we didn't get that moment from Keske Honda in the A-League, which is a real shame because, you know, that would have been a moment for the highlight packages and the league to market itself again and again over the coming years. So,
no.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a shame we didn't get that one moment. But on the park, he's still one of the greatest players I think I've ever seen in the flesh, especially playing in the Australian domestic game.
We did get that from his teammate Ola Toivonen, though. He was just simply superb this season and his consistency was equally brilliant. I think that... As we touch on, Honda didn't really reach the heights that he could have. But in saying that, in your eyes, what kind of legacy, inverted commas, do you think that Honda has left on the A-League? Or what has his imprint been left here in Australia?
Well, arguably, Ola Toivonen has had the superior season. I mean, if you're making it purely on footballing, for footballing reasons, if you're making that decision, then you would probably say you'd rather keep Ola Toivonen around next season than Keske Honda.
Because 100%.
He's been comfortably, for me, the best striker in the league. Regardless of the goal-scoring records, he's still up there. But the way he involves teammates and, you know, improves the whole quality of the Melbourne Victory lineup, you know, I think he's been a class above and a shoehorn, you know, easily slots into my team of the season anyway. But for Honda, the legacy he leaves, I mean, I think he still goes down as one of Melbourne Victory's greatest ever signings, you know, more successful than Harry Kewell was, obviously the highest profile one, but it didn't lead to the trophy return that they wanted. It didn't lead to the huge foreign exposure or the, you know, big uptick in crowds that they were looking for. So I think it's tarnished in some ways and it's a real shame. And that's not all his fault. Obviously, the injury plays a huge part. It's some parts the club has to, you know, take a bit of responsibility. Obviously, Victory, you know, they've had some changes in their media department even during the season, and we speak a lot about how A-League clubs are a little bit closed in terms of access for the media. As members of the media, we find it a little bit frustrating that you can't, you know, get players on all the time to big up the league and really, you know, promote it as you want to, and that I think affects the league a lot. But yeah, I think Honda has been slightly below what we the kind of pass mark of what we would have wanted from him.
Do you think that he himself, you touch on the fact that he was quite active on his Instagram, but do you think he took on enough media appearances and things to do in Australia, or was he a little bit hesitant to take them on?
I think the whole access thing, I mean, he obviously likes to craft his own image. That's why he has sort of a videographer and a photographer following around all the time in his huge entourage. So maybe he was hesitant to, you know, give those kinds of those interviews and so forth. Davutovic had a really good one in the Herald Sun, you know, just before they went away to play that away game in Japan. But they've been few and far between. I'm not sure if that's Honda or if it's the club. It might be a mixture of the two. But, you know, you're quite right. Maybe he didn't put himself out there, you know, for the Australian media as much as he could have. But, you know, his own individual social media output was extremely, you know, strong and good publicity for the game here. So it's hard to criticise him on that front.
I mean, how many times did we see him taking over Victory's Instagram account?
Yeah.
Or just small things that could have maybe attracted even more and different audiences to their social pages.
Yeah, I mean
even the fans that would wait outside training, watching him train every day, at least 40.
And we probably didn't get the mainstream media coverage of him that you would have wanted as well, whether that's because Victory weren't providing access or whether it's just due to the sort of, you know, systemic ignorance of, you know, the round ball code in Australian media, which we so decry so often.
He did say that he loves Australia because he can walk around wherever he wants and no one really recognises him.
Yeah, and that's what Alex Balmihan said as well. He said, if, you know, if Frank Ribery wants to come here and eat his gold-plated steaks in peace, you know, that's fine by him. Yeah, so maybe that's the lifestyle is actually attractive for foreign players, but that doesn't translate into media exposure.
I do agree with you on the fact that Ola Toivonen has certainly left his mark more so than Keske Honda this season, although Honda has made 23 appearances for Victory across all competitions, scoring 8 times. Now, we know that this will also be Kevin Muscat's final game on Wednesday, as will it be Carl Valeri's. How big of a game do you think this will be, even though it is a dead rubber?
I think it's bigger because of the departures, because it's Honda's last game, Valeri, Muscat, you know, so many farewells to so many fond figures at the club for different reasons. And the announcement of Muscat's departure really puts a different spin on this game. I think, you know, maybe it's a smart PR move from Victory to announce Muscat's departure now rather than after the game, because I think you'll get a bigger crowd in attendance. It'll still be a little bit quiet. I know Archie Thompson's last game was an Asian Champions League match with a below average, you know, Victory crowd, and that's been the consistent theme for all A-League clubs, that the Asian Champions League just hasn't attracted the numbers. Those midweek fixtures, you know, people haven't been as interested in them, and especially, you know, since it seems like such a huge barrier for Australian clubs to be successful in Asia with the financial power of the other clubs. I think the fans are turned off it a little bit because they think it's a bit futile, and, you know, maybe Victory and Sydney's results this season have borne that out, or maybe the you know, it's incumbent upon the Australian clubs to really lift their game in Asia, maybe a bit of both. But I think it is a big fixture, you know, emotionally for Victory fans, for Valeri, for Muscat, as a farewell. And I hope we see a good crowd at Amy Park this Wednesday for, you know, seeing them off, and maybe they can get their first win of the season in the ACL group stage finally.
Well, he's likely to field a full-strength squad.
And why wouldn't you? I mean, I think there's a point to prove now with the loss to Sydney in the semi-final being so, you know, the scoreline being so huge and being such a humiliation and embarrassment for the team, and they'll obviously still be hurting from that. So you want to end the season and end the Victory careers of these legends on a positive note. So I think you'll play a full-strength lineup, injuries aside, and hopefully the Victory can get a good result in front of a respectable crowd.
It could also be the final game for many of the other Victory players, such as Costa Barbarousis.
Yeah, there's rumours swirling about a lot of players, a lot of departures, and a lot of arrivals, of course.
And that would also be fitting, because given that Kevin Muscat is on his way out the door, well, why not take a few of the greats with you from the club?
Yeah, I don't know if you know, they'll follow him to his next move or whether they'll pursue opportunities at other clubs overseas. Barbarousis' departure to Europe is now rumour swirling. I didn't think he'd leave for the Uzbek offer earlier in the season, which was real and genuine and a big money move, but, you know, maybe the lifestyle didn't appeal. I know he's got, you know, a young family as well on the way, so maybe he'll want to stay in Melbourne, you know, where it's comfortable. And he's turned down money before, you know, from marquee offer from Wellington. He took a pay cut to come back to the Victory, so obviously likes living here and playing for the club. And I think it would be a blow after his probably most productive season ever in a Victory jersey for him to depart. But, you know, I don't think there's a massive clean out needed at Victory, as some fans have said. I think that's an overreaction to one defeat, even though it is a significant one. I think there are serious changes that have to occur, but that's not a huge, you know, clean out of the squad. And that's,
and I'm not saying a clean out, I'm just saying maybe it's also time for some players to move on. We heard that Costa was talking about this, you know, towards the end of the season. James Troisi has also been linked away. Lawrence Thomas, we thought, was going to leave in the back end of the season. He put those rumours to bed. But still,
and none of the players you mentioned, I think that'll be losses to the club. I don't think it would improve the team. I mean, it depends on the replacements, but it would free up salary cap space, of course. But those guys have been some of the best performers for Victory this season. I think the problems lie more in the defence, where they have to have a massive rethink about how they're spending that money. And maybe that involves some changes further up the pecking order with that sort of star midfield and attack. You know, some of them might have to depart to make room in the salary cap for some, you know, improved fullbacks and a new centre-back, but we'll have to wait and see. I don't think, on balance, I don't think Costa Barbarouses will leave, just based on, you know, his situation and what he's done in the past to actually stay at Victory and return to Victory.
I think that if he has the right offer, he'll go this season.
Maybe. I think Troisi is more of a chance to go, given that, you know, I don't think his place in the team is totally safe, and the new coach might not be quite as big a fan of him as Muscat is. And he'll probably want marquee wages, and whether Victory can offer that with his deal expiring. You probably want to leave one of those slots with Ola Toivonen still reportedly being back-ended, so he'll become a marquee player next season, which is the only way you could get him on a two-year deal. You probably want to leave it up to the new coach whether they want to sign James Troisi on, and it's always very dangerous to sign players to extensions or sign new players when you don't actually have a coach in place.
Oh, yeah, you've got to wait. And we heard from Chairman Anthony Di Pietro, and he said they're already looking for a new coach and they want someone in as soon as possible. So that is certainly underway as we speak. Please get involved at any time. Comment below on Facebook Live if you are with us. And Ivan has come through and said hello. Hello to you. He's also said that on Victory's next manager, I'd look locally first before overseas. Managers like Arthur Pappas and others are prime examples that are ready for that next step.
There's a few rumours swirling. Of course, Arthur Pappas is actually overseas at the moment, coaching under Ange Postecoglou over at Yokohama. There are a few names that in the mix. You know, Scott Miller's been one that's been mentioned to me. I'm not sure if, you know, he's ready to come back to professional football, given he has the sort of academy stuff going on the side with his NPL 2 coaching. You know, there's a whole lot of NPL candidates that you can consider, but I'm not sure if any of them really stand out in particular as, you know, being experienced enough to take on the role or being ready to make that jump up. John Anastasiadis obviously would have been the prime candidate, but obviously he's going off to Western United next season to take up that assistance role. So I'm not sure if anyone, especially on the Victorian front, really stands out to me in particular as a candidate. There's been rumours from the Adelaide Advertiser that Mike Kerr's could be an option. I would not support that. I don't think he's the right style of coach for the club, and I just don't really believe the rumour, to be honest. There's also been a rumour of a European coach swirling around, and I'm a little bit underwhelmed by this as well. He is a big name, and he has played at World Cups, you know, and he's managed, I think, 18 or 19 clubs, but he's got a very underwhelming record. He's bounced around so much. The name is Walter Zenger, the former Italy goalkeeper, and he's managed all over the world. He's managed in the Middle East. He's managed in Europe, in various tiers of Italian football, and he's never stayed anywhere for more than a season. So that doesn't really bode well for me. I know the Italian football, they tend to chop and change their managers, but, you know, Zenger's record, it doesn't seem like the stability that Victory would want after having a head coach in charge for 6 years. So I'm really not sure about that. I know at the press conference the other day, it was actually our friend Michael Lynch from The Age trying to convince Anthony Di Pietro to go after Marcelo Bielsa. I mean, if you could get him, that would be sensational for the league. I doubt that he would come to Australia.
Just looking at Walter Zenger, more than 17 clubs and teams that he's actually managed. That's incredible.
And he was just sacked.
You're not kidding about the short turnaround.
Yeah, he was just sacked from his second division club, I believe, replaced by Cesare Cosmi, which is pretty funny. I'm really not sure he's the right fit. It doesn't seem like, you know, management has worked out that well for him, and he's been operating on his name alone for a little while.
But you'd think that Melbourne Victory would do their due diligence and look to appoint someone longer term rather than just the short term, you know, sort of sacrifice.
I mean, if you look at his past sort of 5 years in coaching, he was at Al Jazeera, came back to Italy with Sampdoria, left very quickly, went back to Middle East with Al Shaab, then went to Wolverhampton Wanderers with the new owners, and that was a complete disaster and ended very quickly. And then he's dropped down tiers in Italy to manage Crotone and Venezia and only stayed one season at each. So, yeah, and he's had a lot of experience, but not much of that experience has been very positive. I'm really skeptical of this one, but it has been a name that's strongly rumoured in Victory circles.
You're obviously on for Vuk's sake as well. You are in touch with a lot of the Melbourne Victory fans. How do you think they would be feeling at the moment, heading into next season, not knowing who the coach is, but also potentially on the cusp of seeing a bit of a player turnaround, something which they haven't seen in a couple of seasons?
It's a big moment of departure. It's a change is always difficult, and I think the fans were, you know, probably baying for Kevin Muscat to step down after that defeat. It's been a long time. I think 6 years is long enough for any manager. You know, there's very few managers you can keep it going longer than that and have a dynasty, as you might say. You know, like the Sir Alex Fergusons don't come around very often, and it's a very unique skill set to be able to manage that for so many years. So I think it's a healthy thing for Victory to, you know, say goodbye to Kevin Muscat, and Kevin Muscat to say goodbye to Victory, because he needs to move on with his managerial career. If he's going to achieve more than he has done, and he has ambitions, I'm sure, of one day managing the Socceroos, so he needs to go somewhere else and you know, develop himself as a manager and prove that he can manage somewhere else than just the comfortable environment where he's a club legend. I think the fans are now feeling a little bit more, you know, reflective and thankful for Kevin Muscat's time at the club now that they know he's departing. And I've seen a lot of calls for the Victory medal being renamed the Muscat medal, which I wholeheartedly agree with. I think that would be a fantastic step from the club. But I think there's also a lot of uncertainty, as you say, about who's going to come in, what style of football they're going to play, how many of these players they're going to keep, when Kevin Muscat's sort of identity and football ideas were so inherent in the squad and the players he recruited. I think it's a talented group, but how do you maximise that? How do you take the players to the next level? And I think they need a coach with a really sort of progressive attacking style of football that suits the identity of the team. But also someone who can sort of build upon what Muscat has done and take it further in terms of, you know, how sharp the players are, breaking down a set defence in possession, not just relying on transition moments, and also the defensive setup, maybe bringing in a manager who will want to press a little bit higher up the pitch. I think, you know, embracing that kind of modern style of football to take Victory forward, I think, is probably the next step for the club.
Josh, we're going to leave the Melbourne Victory chatter there for now, because the Matildas have arrived in Turkey for their pre-FIFA Women's World Cup training camp, and they've completed their first day. And we've got 13 players who have arrived so far, more to come over the next couple of days. But we did hear from a few of the Matildas today, particularly two defenders, Gemma Simon and also Tegan Allen.
Yes, and I think I've got that audio
and
here.
Simon was basically saying that she was just absolutely thrilled to get the call in to camp and also into the Matildas FIFA Women's World Cup squad.
Absolutely massive. Had some bad luck with some injuries over the last couple of years. So, yeah, it was a bit of a surprise, to be honest. If I go back a year ago, I didn't really think I'd be playing again, to be honest, but... yeah, I suppose it kind of just paid off for all the hard work I've kind of put in and the commitment to football over my career.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR. That was Matilda defender Gemma Simon chatting there, and pretty excited to be called into the Matildas team for the FIFA Women's World Cup, something that which, you know, rarely happens. It comes around so rarely, and I think that every player, it's their ultimate goal to participate and represent your country at a FIFA World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, she would have been on the fringes of the squad, not sure whether she was going to be selected or not. You know, some of those players would pretty much be nailed on and fairly certain of their place in the team, but it must be altogether more exciting when you're not quite sure if you're going to make that final cut or be left out and you actually make it onto the plane. Same goes really for Tegan Allen, and she had a bit to say on how the Future Matildas program actually helped maintain her fitness levels.
The Future Matildas program, it was, to be honest, it was really hard work. Like, we worked our asses off in every day at training, and it was a challenge, but I think it will set us up for what we have ahead. Yep, everyone's really excited and looking forward to what's ahead and the World Cup, definitely, but we all have the same goal, and I think we're very focused on what we have to do and what we have to do to get to where we need to be.
Matilda's defender Tegan Allen there, part of that Melbourne Victory team who did so well in the W League, obviously winning the Premier's Plate. And, you know, she's been rewarded with that kind of breakthrough. Obviously, she's actually got 40 Matildas caps, so she's been sort of in and out of the team over a number of years. But that return to the side, age 25, you know, comparative veteran compared to some of the squad. Fantastic achievement for her, and her versatility and as sort of backup depth for the squad will certainly be useful.
It will. And it'll be interesting to see what Ante Milicic does in this last friendly before the Matildas head into the FIFA Women's World Cup group stage. They take on the Netherlands June 1st, only a week or so, a week and a half away.
Yeah, coming around fast, isn't it? And so many, exciting international tournaments on the horizon. You've got the Copa America, African Cup of Nations, Gold Cup, Women's World Cup. There's a Youth World Cup as well. Which one is it?
Yes, the Under-20 FIFA World Cup in Poland is starting in 2 days.
And we'll be bringing that all to you on FNR with coverage and opinion and experts from around the world joining us on the phone lines. But Louise, I think we're going to take a short break before we speak to Sydney FC's CEO Danny Townsend about their title achievement.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Louise Taffer with Josh Parrish joining me here in the studio. And the celebrations, I'm sure, are still happening at the moment for one club in particular. Sydney FC did take out their record, equaling fourth A-League championship after defeating Perth Glory 4-1 on penalties on Sunday. And joining us now is the CEO of Sydney FC, Danny Townsend. Danny, a big congratulations on taking out the A-League title, and thank you so much for joining us on Evenings on FNR.
Yeah, thanks, Louise. It was definitely a pretty fun night on Sunday night in Perth.
Yeah, Danny, take us a little bit behind the scenes. You know, how are the celebrations? I understand the squad would have, did they do a bit of a Mad Monday yesterday, dress up and so forth?
No, not really. We've got our game, the Champions League game tonight against Kawasaki, so that was always sort of playing in the back of our minds that the boys still had one more game to go to finish the season off. But obviously that's always challenging when you've had such a fantastic result Sunday night, and you really do want the guys to celebrate what is a momentous occasion for us all. So, yeah, look, we had a post-game party, which obviously was cut a bit short just given the game went into extra time and penalties, so our time in the venue was limited, and we kicked on after that. And then when we flew back yesterday, got back into the Star 3 hours late because our flight was delayed, we had a fan reception there and a private party again for some of our closer friends and family. So, yeah, we had a bit of celebrating, but not as crazy as you might think.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it's a bit of weird timing with this last ACL fixture, but, you know, obviously a fantastic achievement for the club just one season after, you know, your head coach left to become the Socceroos boss. You lost Mirzajewski and Bobo, two marquee players to overseas teams. It must have been a big rethink in the off season to work out how this whole thing was going to carry on forward and keep being successful.
Yeah, look, obviously losing Graham was always going to be difficult, but we had a lot of confidence in Steve's ability as a coach and a club man to continue the work that Graham and Steve had done together. And I think that's been proven to be the right call. Equally, you know, the guys, I think that the key to any good A-League team is they're Australians. And if you look across our team, we've got a bunch of winners, whether it be Michael Zulu or Ryan Grant, Alex Wilkinson. These guys are, you know, winners year after year. And when you build a foundation of a squad around people like that, sprinkling a couple of internationals on top, you get the job done, and we've proven that.
And Danny, did you expect Steve Corica would take out the title in his inaugural season as the Sky Blues head coach?
Look, I think as a club, we always go into every season expecting to win, irrespective of who's at the helm. You know, the club is more about, you know, the one person. And I think, again, we've proven that this year with, you know, moving Steve into his role and him shuffling a few other deck chairs around. Obviously, with Phil Moss leaving as well, that was another role we had to fill in the coaching staff, Andrew Clark. So it wasn't just Graham. There was plenty of other people that moved on. But what that meant was that we were able to bring people in and probably most importantly, promote people. You know, I think a mature club like ours should be able to promote within, and that's what we did with Steve, and it paid off.
And it's been an interesting season, of course, with the venues as well. You know, Sydney being forced to go on a bit of a travelling roadshow, but it seems as if Leichhardt and Cogger were actually really big hits with your fans.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the feedback we've had from our fans has been great. You know, it helps when you're performing well on the field. You know, I think the Wanderers were sort of stuck with the double negative of being out of their home ground and also not performing all that well. We've been fortunate to be playing well on the pitch, which means your fans are probably more likely to come anywhere. But I think those two venues have definitely proven to be successful from a fan experience perspective and something to build on over the next 2 years while we remain displaced from Allianz.
What was your heart rate like during the penalty shootout, Danny?
I think I said to someone I aged about 10 years in that 15 minutes. But look, it was interesting. You know, I'm a fairly superstitious, nervous type person in going into most A-League games, but the last two games, it's been a bit of a weird feeling. And Scott Barlow, the chairman, and I both felt the same thing. We were very confident going into the game against the Victory and weren't that nervous. And the result was obviously a fantastic one. And going into the grand final, I think the same. Had a very similar feeling. And like when we went to penalties, I've got to say, it was pretty nerve-wracking stuff. But obviously confidence in Redders. He's had a fantastic season and he proved the difference in the end.
Yeah, I did love his dancing on the line. It was excellent stuff. A bit of sort of Bruce Grobbelaar-esque. But that's your third title, I believe, one on penalties. You've got starting to get a bit of a Germany national team type reputation from the spot.
Yeah, we have lost one. So going into this one, we were 2-1. So to go 3-1, I suppose, puts a little bit of a gap on the positives and the negatives. But look, I don't think any of us want to win these big games in penalties. And I think, notwithstanding the decision in the first half around the goal or the disallowed goal, we would like to have won it in 90 minutes. But, it adds to the spectacle, and for those at home on the couch and in the stands, it adds a different dynamic. So.
And, Danny, it's pretty fitting for Alex Bross to end his career that way. How do you sum up his legacy?
Look, there'll be never another player like Broski at this football club. If you look at all of the accolades he's had, the most appearances, most goals, most Champions League appearances, most Champions League goals, you name it, his name's at the top of every list. And I think that's going to be very difficult for anyone to surpass. So, he's not only, I think it's been said a million times, he's not only a great player, but he's a great person, he's a great leader around the club. He's great with our corporate partners, he's great with our members. There's not a thing that he does that he doesn't do in the capacity as club captain. And he's going to be a huge loss. But, all of those great things he does off the field will continue in some capacity, and we'll work that out over the next couple of weeks.
And speaking of Broski, what did you make of his comments today, about the A-League final series, suggesting it's maybe time to scrap it or change how the champions are determined? I think, quite powerful coming from someone who's actually benefited from it this year. And, you guys experienced the same or similar thing last season, having a dominant regular season but losing in the semi-finals. And now for Perth, you must be empathising with them a little bit that it's a sickener to go out like that.
Yeah, I think that was probably the context he answered that question in as it relates to final series. I think everyone can see what they bring to our league. The crowds and the atmosphere at those final series matches are definitely a major difference to the regular season. So I think if he was talking in the context of the experience, I'm sure he would advocate continuing. But I think he's referencing the fact that for Perth, they were feeling pretty hollow yesterday, having had such a great season. And as you say, we could sympathise with them given we had that same feeling this time last year. But I think in the main, the way the final series is, our club at least have views around the way that could be structured better in order to give the top two teams actually a second chance if they do stumble. But look, that can all be addressed down the track, particularly with expansion coming in. There's opportunities to address these things.
So would that maybe be structured a little bit like it used to be with the top two teams playing and maybe a second chance for the loser in the top bracket? Or, do you have a specific plan that you'd like to promote and suggest to FFA?
Yeah, look, I think that one you referenced is a good one. I experienced it in the NSL, having won a premiership and then going on and losing a grand final. We lost that grand final to South Melbourne, having had a second bite of the cherry. And I think we, having gone through that myself, I did not feel a sense of injustice losing to South Melbourne in that grand final because we'd had two chances. So I think something along those lines would make a lot more sense.
And I do have to ask you, Danny, I know it's slightly less of a storyline given that you eventually won on penalties, but that VAR sort of non-decision in the first half obviously drew a lot of controversy. It looked like Michael Zullo was onside, but they didn't overturn the assistant's decision. What's been your experience with VAR in general as CEO of Sydney? What's your opinion on it?
Yeah, look, you know, it's tough continuing to have to defend it, to be honest. I've always been an advocate for it, but it does seem to continue to rear its head in an ugly fashion more often than not. And I think the other night was another example. Although I think in that case, it was probably the assistant referee who flagged, who probably shouldn't have flagged. And I think the FFA have acknowledged that, you know, it was probably too close for the AR to make that call, because if you can't separate it in a slow motion replay, then it's obviously a bit of a leap of faith for the AR to call it and flag it in real time. So, you know, I think in this day and age, the AR should be leaving their flags down if there's any doubt. And if then the video referee has to determine that it was offside rather than the opposite, which is what happened on Sunday night.
And Danny, what's been the highlight for you this season?
I think there's been many highlights, but I think really seeing Steve and the guys just knuckle down and get on with what we do best at Sydney FC, just, you know, the ruthlessness around all aspects of what we do, the attention to detail, you know, that is something that we've been working on for many years, and to see that transition into what is, you know, a new group of coaching staff and you know, the usual turnover of some players, and to see them continue on in that fashion was really pleasing. And equally, I think the way our fans have stuck with us through the period of dislocation, you know, it's not easy for some of our fans who are spread all over Sydney to get to Cogger or to get to Leichhardt, and they keep turning up in numbers and in Sky Blue, and I think, yeah, that was also something that was really, really pleasing for me as a CEO.
And I do also have to ask you, Danny, about the situation at the semi-final, you know, off the field. Obviously, Rory Carroll, his story has been, you know, well covered in the media. Is there investigations and so forth ongoing behind the scenes with Sydney and with FFA to determine, you know, what went on there?
Yeah, look, we always support our supporters in those type of instances. If there is evidence to suggest they haven't been behaving the right way, then we'll obviously go down the right path. But in this case, I think there was a fair bit of grey area, and you know, it's just not, it's one isolated incident. I think in our game, there's way too many of these incidents happening where security and law enforcement are colliding with our fans on a regular basis in a negative way, and we've got to change that. And that's only going to happen by some real positive collaboration between fan groups, the clubs, the stadium operators, and the police. So, yeah, we'll be working on that in the off-season. I know Greg O'Rourke's already got meetings and diaries with commissioners and things like that to try and start to get some parity on how football fans are treated in comparison to AFL and rugby league.
Absolutely. That's good to hear, Danny. And, you know, we here at FNR are really hoping that some progress can be made in how football fans are treated by law enforcement and by stadium security as well. And, you know, maybe the clubs will have an increased role in those negotiations with A-League independence potentially on the horizon.
Yeah, look, that's definitely something that will be addressed. You know, I think operationally the FFA continuing to go down that path, you know, irrespective of what happens as a result of the new league working group. But, you know, I think, you know, we should be talking about the great achievements of the players on the field and the coaches. You know, our club's won an A-League, a W-League, an E-League and a power chair league all in the one season, which I don't think anyone's ever done before. So, you know, we should be talking about that, and all those great people have put in a huge amount of work across those teams and not off-field incidents. But, you know, that's all to be solved in the future, but we're committed to doing that.
And Danny, now that the season is done and dusted, what's on the agenda for you? Are you going to take a long sabbatical?
I wish. No, I think I said to Stevie yesterday, today's the first day of the off-season, so or the first day of the new pre-season, whichever way you want to look at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're busily trying to continue to build our squad and build on the success we've had. You know, we're not a club that rests on its laurels. And I think for me as a CEO, the next probably 6 weeks are going to be really busy in working with Steve and Terry McFlynn to bring in the best players and equally retain the ones that have helped us do what we've done this year. But my downtime will typically come probably around September when all that recruitment's over and the boys are coming back into pre-season. So, there's no real feed up in the short term, unfortunately.
Well, Danny, congratulations on a fantastic season across the whole club, as you mentioned, you know, the W League team as well, getting that finals glory. One more game tonight, of course, in the Asian Champions League. Best of luck for that, and thank you so much for joining us here on FNR.
Yeah, thanks, Lou. Thanks, Josh. Appreciate you having me on.
Sydney CEO Danny Townsend joining us on the program. Fantastic to hear from him. And, you know, it is across the club. You mentioned the E-League, the power chair, been an incredibly successful season. And I think just the recruitment from Sydney has been a real highlight. Obviously, you know, we both tipped Perth, I believe, you know, before the weekend's game, and they were maybe the story of the season in terms of the top team. But Sydney been so competitive with so many changes at the club over the off season, and that recruitment across both A League and W League teams has been absolutely sensational. The players that they've brought in to complement the existing, you know, base of local players that they already had.
Yeah, and I also think that it's just so fitting that Steve Corica was able to take out the title in his inaugural season as head coach. Obviously, he's been alongside Graham Arnold for many, many years now, but to do it off your own cuff is just a massive achievement for him, and he'll be looking to build on that next season, maybe more so in Asia.
Yeah, I think Asia is probably the... You know, it's the final frontier for so many A-League clubs and A-League coaches. Tony Popovich, not so much. It's the other way around.
And we know that now Adam Lafondra is going to be sticking around. He loves Australia. He loves the fact that he's just only 10 or so minutes from the beach.
Yeah, didn't enjoy the Game of Thrones ending, apparently, from judging by his Twitter account. But he's been very happy with his club situation. And, you know, he's been a real asset to that team just on the park. But also, you know, you can tell from when we've chatted to him on the station, his attitude is really positive. He's a real, you know, good character in the changing rooms, I think probably with the morale of the side. And, you know, his finishing ability in front of goal, his movement and the way he's complemented that team's defensive strategy as well has been a highlight for them this season, and one of the key reasons why they've managed to get all the way to the final and in the lottery of penalties, at least, to win the title.
What happens to the Joe Marston medalist, Milos Ninkovic? Will he stick around?
I have to imagine he will. I mean, it's been such a stable period for him at that club. Long-term success, and I don't see why he would leave, you know, unless maybe the money is tempting elsewhere. But I'm pretty surprised he won the Joe Marston medal, to be honest. I think the voting was before the penalty shootout. And
who would you have given it to?
Absolutely Andrew Redmayne, hands down. I think, well, hands up and legs up in the air as well. probably more better description. But, yeah, he was exceptional. Unblemished all game, of course. Didn't have that much to do, but did make a couple of good saves. And then in the penalty shootout was fantastic and won the game for Sydney. So I think he's the obvious winner. I didn't think it was a great game overall. And, you know, Ninkovic probably did all he could in the circumstances with his team on the back foot, sort of sitting and defending for a lot of that game. But Andrew Redmayne, for me, should have won the Joe Marston medal. And I think it's a function of how the votes are cast for that award that means he didn't.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Louise Taffer with Josh Parrish. Here in the studio with me, it's time to switch topics and look at our Australians abroad, and our expert Damien Davies joins us now. Damien, thank you for coming on the show.
Good evening, Louise. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you going?
All good, thank you.
That's
slowly,
good.
Slowly winding down the European football.
Yes, that's it. And we've had a bit of success, especially in Germany, with one of the Canberra locals who's made his way into the Bundesliga.
Yes, George Timothiao, we've talked about a couple of times over the last month or so. He's been on the bench, but he actually made his debut for Schalke on the weekend. He got a full 90 minutes, and they did have a draw. He was playing left-back, I believe, in the back three. Very, very quick rise to fame. There's been quite a lot of media about him over the last week, where he's essentially a former Sydney FC reserves player, never got a look-in, so went to Sydney Olympic. Got taken over to Germany, was playing in the reserves team, who are actually in the fifth division. And then in the last couple of weeks, has obviously got himself up to a Bundesliga debut, albeit in a dead rubber. It's still a lot better than a lot of other people will ever claim as a point of fame.
Yeah, and the fact that Schalke have avoided relegation this season, the Bundesliga is, you know, a great plus for him. Obviously, they rotated the squad in the dead rubber, as you mentioned, but it shows, I think, there's this different pathway for some players who are overlooked at A-League level.
Absolutely. I think it's a fantastic story about how he's been successful. And I'm not really thrilled about the cap him conversations 5 minutes after he's made his debut. But I think it says a lot about the Australians over in Germany now, right? Matt Leckie's been there for a while. And Brandon Brello, we know, was taken by Freiburg, who unfortunately had a knee injury, but he did make his comeback and has been playing in the reserves for them as well. So things going well, we could see a couple of Aussies in the top league in Germany next year, which would be fantastic.
Yeah, it would be, because I feel like at the moment there's always the discussion about the fact that we're not producing enough international players who are in Europe's top five leagues. So it would be only fitting if we could get more to play in leagues like the Bundesliga.
Oh, it'd be fantastic. I think there's a couple of names we've talked about on the segment over the last few weeks of guys that potentially could get themselves into particularly England. I mean, from Australia, that's probably the biggest focus, getting into the English Premier League. But this time of year always gives us hope that we can hopefully get ourselves up to sort of 6 to 10 in those top five leagues, as you mentioned. That would be a great result.
Well, moving on then, Damien, where would you like to start?
Let's keep going through Europe. So a lot of leagues winding up, so a little bit limited stuff there. We will mention Trent Sainsbury did make yet another appearance for PSV. The fact that it was 2 minutes off the bench doesn't need to necessarily be mentioned. Arjen Pushtik did get two appearances as well off the bench for the last two games for Groningen, his side. Just to mention as well, PSV did end up second in the league behind Ajax, so they do get a Champions League spot. But I think our Aussies will move on in the off-season. Danny Vukovic did claim the title in Belgium, so caps off a great season. We knew that was on the cards. His team has been on top of the league for probably the last, I'm going to say, 8 weeks.
And he'll have to contend with Vincent Kompany as Anderlecht player-manager next season.
Mm. Yes, interesting. I haven't seen that one. More civil wear for Aussies. Awa Mabil came on as a late sub in extra time. His side did win a penalty shootout to hoist the cup in Denmark. It wasn't so good during the week. I mean, he got 90 minutes in the league and unfortunately lost, so they did miss out on a Europa spot. And Mobile got a full 90 in league, but they did lose as well. A couple of other things from Europe. James Holland scored the winner for his club side in Austria. Jimmy Jago started but got a red card. His brother, who we know is in Faroe Islands, also got a red card. So not too many times brothers would have both got red cards in the same weekend. He did score twice as well before that happened. And a couple of other little bits and pieces. Jana started and scored in AEK's win in Cyprus. So they continue to push for European honours there. And Dylan Minane, who's been a little bit understated, I would say, in the last couple of months. He's in Finland. He had 90 minutes cup win for his side and also 90 minutes in a draw in the league. Importantly, in the cup, I think that puts him through to the final now, which will also put his side, Mannheim, up for a European spot next season as well.
Yeah, Dylan Minane, maybe one of those players. He did play a bit of A-League football, but, you know, sort of making the leap over to Europe, a bit of a leap of faith, and he's actually getting some football, which is fantastic. And I did see that goal from James Holland. Brilliant finish at the near post. I think his teammate who crossed it was actually offside, but, you know, no matter, didn't get called, and James Holland grabs a goal. Another, you know, our Aussies in Austria doing very successful this season.
Well, I'm pretty sure James Holland's qualified for Champions League now, right?
Yeah.
I think they're second on the table, which I think is in Austria's Champions League, so...
A bit
great
of a
result.
Forgotten man is sort of in Socceroos talk, but you won't see a more staunch fan and defender of the national team on social media than James Holland, that's for sure. But let's talk about Mile Jedinak. He might be sensationally on his way back to the Premier League when we thought Aston Villa were dead and buried and he was on his way out of the club.
There's been a lot of jokes about him the last few weeks. The fact that he played up front a couple of weeks ago, came off the bench and played up front, people thought he'd been... come back as a potential striker. This week it was classic. He came off the bench as a sub, something like the 120th minute, 121st minute. So they clearly brought him on just to score a penalty, and of course he did so. He's got a phenomenal record for taking penalties both at club and country level. So Villa do progress. They now have Derby, Derby County, to get into the Premier League. So I did joke a little bit about it last week, whether or not Mille will end up in the Premier League as well. Never say never. We'll see how he goes.
Yeah, amazing. Coming up against Frank Lampard's Derby. It's actually Lampard versus John Terry on the sidelines, JT being assistant coach at Villa. But hopefully Jedinak, you know, if it does go all the way down to the penalty shootout, can be summoned again.
Yes, and just to round out, I guess, the playoffs in the UK, we talked last week about Lyndon Dykes against Chris Duggan, two Australians playing off for the Scottish Championship. to stay in the Scottish Championship. Queen of the South did go through with Lyndon scoring as well. So he's signed off in the best possible way as he moves to the Premier League in Scotland next season.
And moving on to Asia, some good news for Andrew Naboot.
Good and bad. He's been there for, 18 months at the Aurora Reds. He did get his debut goal early in the piece, but then did get injured in about the 40th minute and went off. And his side then lost at home 3-2, unfortunately. So mixed results. He's clearly happy to be on the board, and it's obviously good for our prospects. Another Aussie scoring in a big league. Mitch Langright continued. He had another 90 minutes and a 1-1 draw. So pretty good news there for our Aussies in Japan. Maybe a bit of a smoky for the upcoming Socceroos. Jovanic in Korea, playing at Jeju, played 90 minutes in the FA Cup draw and also played 90 minutes in the league. He's had a phenomenal season in terms of minutes played. We are struggling at centre-back, so he may be a little bit of a smoky. Let's keep our eyes on him. I think he's 28 now, so probably a little bit more mature than when he was probably talked about in the potential Socceroos 3 or 4 years ago. Taggart, Abini, those guys continued in Korea, which is good. All the Aussies started in Saudi Arabia. However, not the greatest news. Brad Jones also got silverware there with his side claiming the title. However, Williams, Jack Duncan and Osama Malik all got relegated. So we'll see which of those guys are on the move over the coming months. I believe Reece had signed a contract extension from, 3 or 4 months ago. So I'm not quite sure what that's going to mean. He may have had a clause. And then maybe just to round out Asia, Blake Rusciuto, who we've talked about in terms of his exploits in Singapore, won Player of the Month in that league. Apparently that's also got Uruguay chasing him about potentially being a representative of their nation. As we know, he's eligible for a couple of different nations. So we'll see how much of that is media talk and how much of that is real.
Yeah, fascinating that he's gone over from MPL and suddenly become seemingly one of the best players in that league. But you mentioned Alexander Jovanovic. He is an absolute man mountain in defence. He's 6'5". So in the great tradition of Australians playing at centre-back over in Korea, sort of the Sasha Ognjanovsky effect, he could be another one, in the production line, maybe another late bloomer like Ognjanovsky was. But let's talk a little bit about the Matildas. Great minutes for them. A few of them weren't playing as much as we would have liked, but just about, all of them getting good minutes going into the Matildas camp.
Yeah, I do owe an apology. I suggested last week they were all winding up as they were heading off to the World Cup, but our girls in the US all ran around again. Steph Catley got 45 minutes, which is good to see her back running around. Carpenter, Ford, Amy Harrison, Chloe Legazzo all started, which is great, with Ford scoring. Sam Kerr did it back-to-back, 2 goals again this week, so that's 4 goals in the last 2 games. Claire Polkinghorne got a start. And Kaya Simon was also used. She got 35 minutes with, as she comes back and gets a bit of form. Great to see. I know she's still kind of in a train-on squad. I guess that's the name of her position for the World Cup. But good to see her getting a few minutes as well. And then maybe just to close out, guys, the Aussie coaches, there's some pretty big news there. Ange had a 4-1 home win on the weekend. Has now got Yokohama up to 6th on the table. And Roberto Venturato, who is the coach at Citadel in Serie B in Italy, had a 2-1 away win on the last day of the regular season to end 7th on the table, which means his club now goes into the playoffs. So worth watching that. He may be able to get himself up into the top league in Italy.
Yeah, the playoffs in Italian football are quite complicated, but I think Serie B is not too complicated. The tier below is like this crazy regional split thing. But, hopefully he can get himself up into the top flight. Would be huge. A guy that, maybe not too many people back home in Australia know about, but it's always good to see Australian coaches doing well in Europe because they're so few and far between.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Well, Damien, I think we'll leave it there, but thank you so much for joining us here on FNR once again. We might be wrapping up this Aussies Abroad segment maybe this week or next week, given that the club football is sort of coming to a halt. But thank you for all of your contributions throughout the season. I'm sure we'll hear from you in not too long.
No problem at all, guys. Been a pleasure, as always, and we'll speak soon.
Damien Davies, our Aussies abroad expert, joining us as he always does on a Tuesday. Obviously, with you know club football winding up, you know we might not be hearing from him every Tuesday, but whenever there's something to talk about, we'll be sure to give him a call. And also, we'll be trying to line up a few interviews with some of the guys that we always mention every Tuesday, hearing from them firsthand what it's like to be playing in some of these far-flung leagues across the world.
Yeah, well, that's it. And I mean, a lot of the Australians abroad will return to their home country to visit their family, no doubt, in this off-season.
Yes, absolutely. So we might be able to get them in a suitable sort of time slot as well. With it's a little bit difficult when, you know, you have to ask Denny Jeanreau to wake up at 7 a.m. or whatever to take a call after he's been training hard. But, yeah, that just about does it for Evenings on FNR this evening. Make sure you tune in again at 7 p.m. because we've got Avenger Radio, the Avondale show, coming up. And we'll be speaking to the star of the Avondale team, Stefan Zinni, who's going to be coming on the program, as well as the Geelong Region Soccer Show at 8 p.m. A number of very interesting guests coming up on that show, including Kylie Grisbeck, Barwon Club Treasurer Colin Drain, and Hoppers Crossing Soccer Club's Kevin Smart. So a lot of local Geelong football being covered from 8 p.m. here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Great stuff, Josh. Thank you for your company here in the studio this evening, and thank you for your company at home. Tune in again at the same time tomorrow. Bye for now.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.